Chapter 26. But of this, I shall speak again presently. I return in the meantime to the article of infecting one another at first, before people came to right notions of the infection, and of infecting one another. People were only shy of those that were really sick. A man with a cap upon his head, or with clothes round his neck, which was the case of those that had swellings there. Such was indeed frightful. But when we saw a gentleman dressed, with his band on and his gloves in his hand, his hat upon his head, and his hair combed, of such we bade not the least apprehensions, and people conversed a great while freely, especially with their neighbors and such as they knew. But when the physicians assured us that the danger was as well from the sound, that is, the seemingly sound, as the sick, and that those people who thought themselves entirely free were oftentimes the most fatal, and that it came to be generally understood that people were sensible of it, and of the reason of it, then, I say, they began to be jealous of everybody, and a vast number of people locked themselves up, so as not to come abroad into any company at all, nor suffer any that had been abroad in promiscuous company, to come into their houses, or near them at least, not so near them, as to be within the reach of their breath, or of any smell from them. And when they were obliged to converse at a distance with strangers, they would always have preservatives in their mouths, and about their clothes to repel, and keep off the infection. It must be acknowledged, that when people began to use these cautions they were less exposed to danger, and the infection did not break into such houses so furiously as it did into others before. And thousands of families were preserved, speaking with due reserve to the direction of divine providence, by that means. But it was impossible to beat anything into the heads of the poor. They went on with the usual impetuosity of their tempers, full of outcries and lamentations when taken, but madly careless of themselves, foolhardy and obstinate, while they were well. Where they could get employment they pushed into any kind of business, the most dangerous and the most liable to infection. And if they were spoken to, their answer would be, I must trust to God for that. If I am taken, then I am provided for, and there is an end of me, and the like. Or thus, why, what must I do? I can't starve. I had as good have the plague as perish for want. I have no work. What could I do? I must do this or beg. Apostrophe suppose it was burying the dead, or attending the sick, or watching infected houses, which were all terrible hazards, but their tale was generally the same. It is true, necessity was a very justifiable warrantable plea, and nothing could be better, but their way of talk was much the same, where the necessities were not the same. This adventurous conduct of the poor was that which brought the plague among them in a most furious manner, and this, joined to the distress of their circumstances when taken, was the reason why they died so by heaps. For I cannot say I could observe one jot of better husbandry among them, I mean the laboring poor, while they were all well, and getting money than there was before, but as lavish, as extravagant, and as thoughtless for tomorrow as ever. So that when they came to be taken sick they were immediately in the utmost distress, as well for want as for sickness, as well for lack of food as lack of health. This misery of the poor I had many occasions to be an eyewitness of, and sometimes also of the charitable assistance that some pious people daily gave to such, sending them relief and supplies both of food, physic, and other help, as they found they wanted. And indeed it is a debt of justice due to the temper of the people of that day to take notice here, that not only great sums, very great sums of money were charitably sent to the Lord Mayor and Aldermen for the assistance and support of the poor distempered people, but abundance of private people daily distributed large sums of money for their relief, and sent people about to inquire into the condition of particular distressed and visited families, and relieved them, Nay, some pious ladies were so transported with zeal in so good a work, and so confident in the protection of Providence in discharge of the great duty of charity, that they went about in person distributing alms to the poor, and even visiting poor families, though sick and infected, in their very houses, appointing nurses to attend those that wanted attending, and ordering apothecaries and surgeons, the first to supply them with drugs or plasters, and such things as they wanted, and the last to lance, and dress the swellings and tumors, where such were wanting, giving their blessing to the poor in substantial relief to them, as well as hearty prayers for them. I will not undertake to say, as some do, that none of those charitable people were suffered to fall under the calamity itself. But this I may say, that I never knew any one of them that miscarried, which I mention for the encouragement of others in case of the like distress. And doubtless, if they that give to the poor lend to the Lord, and he will repay them, those that hazard their lives, to give to the poor, and to comfort, and assist the poor in such a misery as this, may hope to be protected in the work. Nor was this charity, so extraordinary eminent only in a few, but, for I cannot lightly quit this point, the charity of the rich, as well in the city and suburbs, as from the country, was so great that, in a word, a prodigious number of people who must otherwise inevitably have perished for want as well as sickness were supported and subsisted by it. And though I could never, nor I believe anyone else, come to a full knowledge of what was so contributed, yet I do believe that, as I heard one say that was a critical observer of that part, there was not only many thousand pounds contributed, but many hundred thousand pounds, to the relief of the poor of this distressed, afflicted city. Nay, one man affirmed to me that he could reckon up above 100,000 pounds a week, which was distributed by the churchwardens at the several parish vestries by the Lord Mayor and Aldermen in the several wards and precincts, and by the particular direction of the court, and of the justices respectively in the parts where they resided, over and above the private charity distributed by pious bands, in the manner I speak of. And this continued for many weeks together. I confess this is a very great sum, but if it be true, that there was distributed in the parish of Cripplegate only, 17,800 in 1 week to the relief of the poor, as I heard reported, and which I really believe was true, the other may not be improbable. It was doubtless to be reckoned among the many signal good providences which attended this great city, and of which there were many other worth recording. I say, this was a very remarkable one, that it pleased God thus, to move the hearts of the people in all parts of the kingdom so cheerfully, to contribute to the relief and support of the poor at London, the good consequences of which were felt many ways, and particularly in preserving the lives, and recovering the health of so many thousands, and keeping so many thousands of families from perishing and starving. And now I am talking of the merciful disposition of Providence in this time of calamity, I cannot but mention again, though I have spoken several times of it already on other accounts, I mean that of the progression of the distemper, how it began at one end of the town, and proceeded gradually and slowly from one part to another, and like a dark cloud that passes over our heads, which, as it thickens and overcasts the air at one end, dears up at the other end. So, while the plague went on raging from west to east, as it went forwards east, it abated in the west, by which means those parts of the town which were not seized, or who were left, and where it had spent its fury, were, as it were, spared to help and assist the other. Whereas, had the distemper spread itself over the whole city and suburbs, at once, raging in all places alike, as it has done since in some places abroad, the whole body of the people must have been overwhelmed, and there would have died 20,000 a day, as they say there did at Naples, nor would the people have been able to have helped or assisted one another. For it must be observed, that where the plague was in its full force, there indeed the people were very miserable, and the consternation was inexpressible. but a little before it reached even to that place, or presently after it was gone, they were quite another sort of people, and I cannot but acknowledge that there was too much of that common temper of mankind to be found among us all at that time, namely, to forget the deliverance when the danger is past. But I shall come to speak of that part again. It must not be forgot here to take some notice of the state of trade during the time of this common calamity, and this with respect to foreign trade, as also to our home trade. As to foreign trade, there needs little to be said. The trading nations of Europe were all afraid of us. No port of France, or Holland, or Spain, or Italy would admit our ships or correspond with us. Indeed, we stood on ill terms with the Dutch, and were in a furious war with them, but though in a bad condition to fight abroad, who had such dreadful enemies, to struggle with at home. Our merchants were accordingly at a full stop. Their ships could go nowhere, that is to say, to no place abroad. Their manufactures and merchandise, that is to say, of our growth, would not be touched abroad. They were as much afraid of our goods as they were of our people. And indeed they had reason. For our woolen manufactures are as retentive of infection as human bodies, and if packed up by persons infected, would receive the infection, and be as dangerous to touch as a man would be that was infected. And therefore, when any English vessel arrived in foreign countries, if they did take the goods on shore, they always caused the bales to be opened and aired in places appointed for that purpose. But from London they would not suffer them to come into port, much less to unlade their goods, upon any terms whatever, and this strictness was especially used with them in Spain and Italy. In Turkey and the islands of the Arches indeed, as they are called, as well those belonging to the Turks, as to the Venetians, they were not so very rigid. In the first there was no obstruction at all. And four ships which were then in the river loading for Italy, that is, for Leghorn and Naples being denied product, as they call it, went on to Turkey, and were freely admitted to unlade their cargo without any difficulty, only that when they arrived there, some of their cargo was not fit for sale in that country, and other parts of it being consigned to merchants at Leghorn, the captains of the ships had no right nor any orders to dispose of the goods, so that great inconveniences followed to the merchants. But this was nothing but what the necessity of affairs required, and the merchants at Leghorn and Naples having notice given them, sent again from thence, to take care of the effects which were particularly consigned to those ports, and to bring back in other ships such as were improper for the markets at Smyrna and Scanderoon. The inconveniences in Spain and Portugal were still greater, for they would by no means suffer our ships, especially those from London, to come into any of their ports, much less to unlade. There was a report that one of our ships, having by stealth delivered her cargo, among which was some bales of English cloth, cotton, kerseys, and such like goods, the Spaniards caused all the goods to be burned, and punished the men with death who were concerned in carrying them on shore. This, I believe, was in part true, though I do not affirm it, but it is not at all unlikely, seeing the danger was really very great, the infection being so violent in London. I heard likewise that the plague was carried into those countries by some of our ships, and particularly to the port of Faro in the kingdom of Algarve, belonging to the king of Portugal, and that several persons died of it there, but it was not confirmed. On the other hand, though the Spaniards and Portuguese were so shy of us, it is most certain that the plague, as has been said, keeping at first much at that end of the town next Westminster, the merchandising part of the town, such as the city, and the waterside, was perfectly sound till at least the beginning of July, and the ships in the river till the beginning of August, for to the 1st of July there had died but 7 within the whole city, and but 60 within the liberties, but 1 in all the parishes of Stepney, Aldgate, and Whitechapel, and but 2 in the 8 parishes of Southwark. But it was the same thing abroad, Therefore the bad news was gone over the whole world, that the city of London was infected with the plague, and there was no inquiring there how the infection proceeded, or at which part of the town it was begun, or was reached to. Besides, after it began to spread it increased so fast, and the bills grew so high all on a sudden, that it was to no purpose, to lessen the report of it, or endeavor to make the people abroad think it better than it was. The account which the weekly bills gave in was sufficient, and that there died 2,000 to 3,000 or 4,000 a week was sufficient to alarm the whole trading part of the world. And the following time, being so dreadful also in the very city itself, put the whole world, I say, upon their guard against it. You may be sure, also, that the report of these things lost nothing in the carriage. The plague was itself very terrible, and the distress of the people very great, as you may observe of what I have said. But the rumor was infinitely greater, and it must not be wondered, that our friends abroad,
as my brother's correspondents in particular were told there, namely, in Portugal and Italy, where he chiefly traded, said,
that in London there died 20,000 in a week, that the dead bodies lay unburied by heaps, that the living were not sufficient to bury the dead or the sound, to look after the sick. That all the kingdom was infected likewise, so that it was an universal malady such as was never heard of in those parts of the world, and they could hardly believe us, when we gave them an account how things really were, and how there was not above 1/10 part of the people dead, that there was 500,000 left that lived all the time in the town, that now the people began to walk the streets again, and those who were fled to return, there was no miss of the usual throng of people in the streets, except as every family might miss their relations and neighbors, and the like. I say they could not believe these things, and if inquiry were now to be made in Naples, or in other cities on the coast of Italy, they would tell you, that there was a dreadful infection in London, so many years ago, in which, as above, there died 20,000 in a week, and see just as we have had it reported in London, that there was a plague in the city of Naples in the year 1656 in which there died 20,000 people in a day, of which I have had very good satisfaction, that it was utterly false. But these extravagant reports were very prejudicial to our trade, as well as unjust, and injurious in themselves, for it was a long time after the plague was quite over before our trade could recover itself in those parts of the world, and the Flemings and Dutch,
but especially the last,
made very great advantages of it, having all the market to themselves, and even buying our manufactures in several parts of England, where the plague was not, and carrying them to Holland and Flanders, and from thence transporting them to Spain, and to Italy, as if they had been of their own making. But they were detected sometimes and punished. That is to say, their goods confiscated and ships also. For if it was true, that our manufactures as well as our people were infected, and that it was dangerous to touch, or to open, and receive the smell of them, then those people ran the hazard by that clandestine trade, not only of carrying the contagion into their own country, but also of infecting the nations to whom they traded with those goods, which, considering how many lives might be lost in consequence of such an action, must be a trade that no men of conscience could suffer themselves to be concerned in. I do not take upon me to say that any harm was done, I mean of that kind, by those people, but I doubt I need not make any such proviso in the case of our own country. For either by our people of London, or by the commerce which made their conversing with all sorts of people in every country, and of every considerable town necessary, I say, by this means the plague was first, or last spread all over the kingdom, as well in London as in all the cities and great towns, especially in the trading manufacturing towns and seaports. So that, first or last, all the considerable places in England were visited more or less, and the kingdom of Ireland in some places, but not so universally. How it fared with the people in Scotland I had no opportunity to inquire. It is to be observed, that while the plague continued,
so violent in London, the outports, as they are called, enjoyed a very great trade, especially to the adjacent countries, and to our own plantations. For example, the towns of Colchester, Yarmouth, and Hun, on that side of England, exported to Holland and Hamburg the manufactures of the adjacent countries for several months after the trade with London was, as it were, entirely shut up. Likewise the cities of Bristol and Exeter, with the port of Plymouth, had the like advantage to Spain, to the Canaries, to Guinea, and to the West Indies, and particularly to Ireland. But as the plague spread itself every way after it had been in London to such a degree as it was in August and September, so all or most of those cities and towns were infected first or last, and then trade was, as it were, under a general embargo, or at a full stop as I shall observe further when I speak of our home trade. One thing, however, must be observed. That as to ships coming in from abroad, as many, you may be sure, did, some who were out in all. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.